Welcome back out to the Shield Armory Podcast. I'm Chaplain Hughes, and I'm at the table with Chaplain Potter and Chaplain Stevenson, and we also have a special guest. Guys, it's another episode of our Meet the Chiefs series, and this has been so fun having a chance to sit down with the Chiefs of our Roanoke Valley departments and getting to know them, and I'm looking forward to today's guest.
That's right. This is going to be exciting. It's going to be fun-filled, and I think we're going to learn a lot.
And Gareth possibly could get hurt during this episode.
Yeah, we got workers' comp.
It all depends what happens.
With what just happened at the table before we hit record, I think there's a strong possibility of that taking place today.
Make memories.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Well, I tell you what, let's let our guest, we're going to let him give a chance to introduce himself, tell us who he is, a little bit about his career, and then we'll dive into some of today's questions. Go ahead, Chief.
All right. Hey, good to see everybody. So I'm Scott Booth, the Chief of Police here in Roanoke, Virginia. Been here for about a year and a half, but been in law enforcement for about 30 years, so that's quite a while. Started my career in Richmond, Virginia, where I started as a brand new rookie officer over in the Highland Park area of the city of Richmond, and then went up through the ranks. Left there as a major after about 20 years, and kind of went out and started doing the chief thing. My first chief's job was the chief of the Metro Washington Airports Authority. Up there for a couple years, and I worked for the federal government for about a year. Hated it. Big bureaucracy. Sorry, God. But big bureaucracy. I always tell people the story that even to buy like a wireless mouse, I had to call DC to get approval.
And
I was pretty high level.
Wow.
I was a GS-15, so you're kind of the top of the heap. And I was like, wow. I said, I'm not used to this. I don't like it. It didn't really fit my personality. And, I started reading about this place called Danville, Virginia, which I had never been there before. And some of the challenges that they were dealing with, especially the high levels of violent crime and low levels of community trust, really, really pulled me in. So I left Charlotte, North Carolina for Danville, Virginia, and I stayed there for about 5.5 years as chief. And then in 2023, Roanoke was looking for a chief. And, you know, I was born here in Roanoke. And years ago, my dad was going to Tech, and it was right during the Vietnam era. So when Dad graduated, he had to actually join the Army to kind of avoid the draft, right? So I was only here for about a year and a half of my life. But so Roanoke to me has always kind of been this level of mystery. And I remember my mom and dad talking about Roanoke and how much, you know, they appreciated their kind of that was early on in their marriage they were here. So when I heard that Roanoke was looking for a chief and, Danville's pretty much in the same region and some of the things that Roanoke was experiencing with violent crime, some of the things that the department were looking for, I thought I might be a fit for that. So came and got the job and haven't regretted it. You know, this is a really good department. It's got really great officers. It serves a really great community, a very diverse community that, and it offers a number of challenges and opportunities. So I really have enjoyed it, you know, and part of that enjoyment comes from getting to work with you guys in Shield Chaplaincy. And I see the work that you all do on a daily basis. You bring a lot of energy to the game every day, and I enjoy that. I'm like an energy parasite, right? So sometimes I just feed off of the energy of others. So, yep, been here for a while now. I like it. Been doing this job for a long time. I enjoy being a chief. Gareth was kind of joking on me before, and Darren was joking on me. My personality, sadly, kind of fits that sometimes. And, what might have held me back in the federal government, I think, tends to be more of an asset in policing. Because let's be realistic, and I hope I don't offend anybody. Policing is really filled with very much type A personalities, right? Even sure. Your most beta police officer is probably more of a type A than most, right? So I think you just kind of become this after 30 years, you know, and as a chief, I was talking to somebody the other day about a personality assessment, and I was reading the room and figuring out, it was a DISC, if you've ever seen that, the DISC, the DISC instrument, and I'm a high D at this point, which is kind of dominating, but I wasn't always like that. For the longest, I was a high I, which is, you know, very much into people and talking, which I still really love. I did a lot of undercover work. And then the more and more you're put in command positions, you see that D creep up and up and up. And that's kind of where I am right now, high D, a little bit lower I. And here I am in Roanoke with you guys. So.
That's right.
That's cool. Well, Chief, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but we have a we share a little bit of a background. I worked as a medic in the city of Danville for 4 years.
And, yeah, man.
Worked there for a while. I'd worked for a missions organization for a little while, then came back. I was my background is fire and EMS, and so I spent 4 years in the city of Danville. And you're right, that's a pretty tough place. It was like that when I was there. So
yeah. But you know, Adam, I will say that Danville kind of grows on you, and I didn't know anything about Danville until I went there for the job. But once I started kind of reading and learning about the history, some of it's painful, and about how policing can really kind of help things turn the corner there. And I believe, you know, I could have left Danville. I could have left policing after Danville and felt very accomplished, because I think we, because I did it with all the folks from there, we built a model that really, really works for that community. You know, that a model of really good policing where they care about people, where the department is more diverse than it's ever been. And, you know, they really are in touch with the dignity and respect of everybody there. So I feel really good about what we did. And just I feel like I'm a builder at this point, wanted to build kind of the same thing here.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So I'm just curious to know, let's back up to when you first started police work. You know, you're that young guy in the academy. Was Chief ever on your mind at that point?
No, not at all. And I'll tell you, Adam, I hope I don't offend. So you know I'm going to offend when I say this, right? So whenever, and I've met a couple people on my travels that have told me, man, day one, I wanted to be chief. And I'm always like, well, you're kind of weird. I said, it's just like, man, I was just really happy. I had just got out of the Army, and, you know, I'd been a sergeant in the Army, and Richmond to me was about the biggest city. It was fairly, you know, an hour and a half from where I grew up. And I wanted to go to an urban center that had some challenges and opportunities. I was just excited for the job and never even thought about being a chief really until probably like my 19th year, when a former chief of mine was recruiting me for my first chief job. I mean, it just wasn't a thing. I would do the training, the leadership training, and I enjoyed, you know, the command aspect of what we were doing. But early on, backing up, I just loved the work, you know, and I love there's an adrenaline rush and excitement of doing police work in a community that needs you. And, you know, I had gotten out of the military specifically to do law enforcement in a city. And being in a city police department still gave me that camaraderie, you know, working with folks with a higher that believed in a higher purpose and wearing that uniform. So that's what drew me in. And that's all I was thinking about for a lot of years. You know, the chief thing is a natural evolution of your leadership journey, right? So then you look at Richmond. I'd probably been there about six and a half years before I became a sergeant. And then, another 5 years as a sergeant, as a lieutenant, captain, major, pretty quick, right? So once I got to that lieutenant level, I moved quickly to major. But I most enjoyed the work and the impact, which is still what I most enjoy, right? So my day one is very much similar, I think, to now. I've never been so excited about the trappings of the job or the office, right? If somebody shows me, you know, that Gareth has his face on a new police chaplain's coin, which could happen, right?
I don't know.
That's a Gareth coin. That's a Gareth on one side and
Scarlet on the other.
Scarlet on the other. What's it? Yeah.
I just don't know that'll be good for the community.
I just always think that impact is so important, right? So once again, day one or year 30, to me, we're so lucky to be in a profession, to be in a job that you have an impact on the community. And even on those bad days, right, as a chief, I look at it like this. Even when the department is going through something or the city or the community is experiencing something, to be able to offer up leadership and chart a course to kind of get us out of those dark waters, I think is really satisfying to me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Chief, I know we have talked about this before. I was living out in Richmond during some of those years, 96 to 2002. And those were some interesting years for Richmond. And I know you were in the thick of it at that time.
Yeah. So I started there in 96. I got out of the Army in March of 96. And then I joined the police department in June of that year. So kind of a quick and jumping into, at the time, Richmond just had a really, really high, you know, homicide rate, high levels of violent crime. And yeah, but got to work with some phenomenal people and a phenomenal community.
You know, you talk about working a long time before the chief was ever on your radar. So obviously, Chief, I would expect, not never being in police work, but serving you all, that from that young guy that first started in the academy to now 30 years later sitting in the chief of Roanoke City, your perspective has probably changed a lot in this world.
Yeah, you know, it has, but it hasn't. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
I think early on, you know, I recognize that in policing, our most important kind of asset and attribute is connecting with our community. And whether it's a patrol officer over in the Highland Park area, or later on, a little bit later, as a detective in the vice unit, then in the narcotics unit, it's all about connecting with people, right? If you're doing an investigation, if you want to have any success, it's connecting with people. If you're leading officers in a city or a portion of the city, if you don't connect with people, whether that's your community members, your officers, your elected officials, your other leaders, you're just not going to be successful. So I think early on, I recognized that so much of it was about connectivity. And I think that still, you know, 30 years later, still sticks with me.
That's pretty cool. Can I press into that just for a little bit?
Yeah, ma'am.
The connectivity with people, kind of what we have seen just serving law enforcement, is that there is a generation that came through that's the old guard.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that have been through stuff, that are salty, that understand it. They come into work, they want to produce, and they want to go home. And that's about it. There is a lower connectivity and a lower relationship. And so we can see the two different types of supervisors. I don't know if you've seen that. When you have a supervisor that I expect you to do your job and I expect you to go home, and that's pretty well it. Now this younger generation that we have been given in law enforcement has a high need for a relationship. That they want people to notice them. They want people to talk to them. Have you seen that in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that one of the things that early on that I saw with police leadership, you know, as a younger officer is, you know, when you look at a rank, Richmond's large enough, you had multiple precincts. So you had the precinct captain, he was the commander. And, you know, I would never see that guy, but maybe once every few months you might catch a glimpse of him.
Did that bother you at all?
Well, I think it did back then. Even then, oh, wow. I was like, well, this is your leader. And, you know, I come from the military, so much more hands-on approach, I think, for leadership for the most part than what I was seeing at the time in police leadership in the 90s. But you would never saw the chief ever. And, you know, you would see your captain, that mid-level, upper-level manager, you know, once a month. And I probably had never spent time with the chief outside of he came to our academy, right, on our day one or day zero early on to kind of yell at us. And then I saw him or another chief, you know, in my year six for interviewing for sergeant, probably not much in between unless I caught a glimpse of him at a crime scene somewhere, right? So there wasn't a lot of direct leadership. Richmond's a larger department. But even then, as an officer, I think I hungered to have a more direct connection with those who led me. So I understand it. Now, sometimes, because I have been around for a while, it's easy for me to default like, man, yeah, these guys want to see me in roll call lineup. They want me to ride with them. I mean, this is a bit much, right? But I get it. I understand it. I think, I don't want to say mastering anything, but I think evolving, a big piece of that is self-awareness, right? Trying to understand where they're coming from. So I do understand it. I do understand that they want to feel connected to their leadership, connected to the organization. And I think for us to move forward, we have to be connected. I think even what we've seen in the city of Roanoke here over the last 18 or 19 months, I think we've seen a department that has continued to evolve, and not necessarily because of me, but I think it's because your leadership is becoming more connected. I see that with our lieutenants and captains, the way they talk about officers and the way they talk about community issues and the way they recognize officers and the way they recognize those same community issues, that's evolved. And a lot of that is connectivity. I think they're listening more to their officers, I like to think, and they're certainly listening more to folks in the community.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, we've been We've been in and around this department for a while. Obviously, you've been many moons. I think I've been through four chiefs at this point.
Yeah, I'm on number five. You're number five for me, just with the city.
Okay.
In 16 years.
So we've
been there.
We've seen a series of leadership styles and leaders. And I would say that your leadership, thankfully, is consistent, and it is relational based. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to several lineups and seen you there. I do see you interacting with officers in the hallways and stuff. Now, obviously, you keep a very full schedule, and you're not always going to be in the building, and you have to do things behind the scenes that people will never see. But it's been refreshing to see the interaction and that you're decisive. You are leading the way, and you've got to have that.
Well, I think the most important thing, right, when you talk about being a chief, part of it is you got to make a decision, good or bad. Now, I do say this. If I'm making a decision that everybody likes that decision, I'm probably doing something wrong. Does that make sense? I mean, you got that right. You got me, brother. If everybody, I tell community members that too, and they're like, oh, I talked to this officer, they like you. I was like, well not everybody's going to like me, right? Because I've got to look at, always got to look at the big picture, right? Mm-hmm. So not only we have officers and how officers feel and officer wellness, there's also some community needs that sometimes might be might not totally enmesh in that, right? So there might be some things that I have to think about from a community perspective when it regards to policies and procedures, and from a community engagement elected officials perspective. I mean, I have to think about those in my decisions, right? I can't just look at it from the officer side of things. Even though I lead the police department, I'm also the chief for the city of Roanoke, right, for the community. I think usually here we see that those can all line up. I think they can all coexist, right? The needs of the officers, the community, and the department can usually exist. And that's how I try to make my decisions, right? So how are we maximizing the benefits for all involved? How are we leading an agency in policing? Make no mistake, policing, we lead parts of the community. They look at us for leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They do. When you show up and you turn order into chaos, if you're wearing that badge and you have the ability to use force, they want you to make decisions. Right. And we have to understand that is a heady responsibility. So I'm always kind of carrying that. But I don't shy away from making decisions. Right. Sometimes it takes me a while. Sometimes I'll talk to some folks. Sometimes I'll look at policies, procedures, talk to command staff. But at the end of the day, everybody deserves for a decision to be made, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess that's why I'm here. And I think that is probably the most important thing that I can give the department is the ability to lead and make a decision.
I think we saw that. Won't pull the veil fully back on this situation, but very early on in your tenure here at Roanoke, we had a pretty significant incident. And I remember sitting with the officers in a room when they listened to your press conference. And you could have taken the chair out from underneath them. It just was so encouraging to them that you provided leadership, you made a decision, and you supported them within a two-minute talk, and you clicked off. And every one of those officers, I remember them saying, I'm so thankful he's here.
Good.
So that was deeply encouraging to them. Mm-hmm. And it, for me, just hearing you talk, to have to balance 100,000 people and then a couple hundred that carry a badge and a gun. Wowzers.
Yeah, but you know, you got to, I think to always be successful in anything, and you have to be who you are, right? Hmm. And I've been making decisions for a long time. I think I understand the profession. Think that I understand this community. I think we, and I don't think, I know, we have some phenomenal police officers here in Roanoke. We really do. And with that incident right there, you know, with that officer that was shot, officer-involved shooting, I had been here about 60 days at the time, and to kind of see, and the department was still kind of getting used to me, and I was getting used to them, the newness of leading a different department. But I saw so many people coming together and so many leaders stepping up. And I mean, it really was very much like a family. I saw you guys coalescing and coming together. So I was very impressed, right? Does that make sense? I felt supported, and I felt like, hey, this is, it's easier to lead in an environment where you feel everything coming together, right? I felt supported. I've led in environments where I've kind of been out there on my own, right? Where maybe they're just looking for me to kind of do everything. And I'm like, wow, that's always imposing, no doubt. But everything was coming together here. And yeah, this is a good organization, no doubt.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Chief, I think we've already hit on some of this in talking today and just some of the things that you shared. But if somebody walked up to you today and said, hey, Chief Booth, what is it that makes you tick? What is it that you're passionate about? Because obviously some of the things you've talked about and how you lead is, it's obvious that's very passionate for you. You're very passionate about those things, no doubt. And we've seen that stuff play out. But if somebody walked up to you and asked you that question, what would you say to them?
So at the end of the day with me, it's always that impact, right? And you know, it probably took my first chief's job to kind of figure out who I was going to be as a chief. Right. So I kind of knew who I was as a police officer and a police leader, but as a chief, and the way my kind of the chief role was sold to me originally by a mentor of mine was like, hey, man, you know, you can come up here and you can get the chief title. It's a big deal. You're leading in a really cool area. I mean, that's how it was sold. And he's a great guy. Don't get me wrong, mentor of mine. But he sold me on the trappings of the job, right? To use your kind of words that we have in front of, the trappings of being the chief, where, you know, you're the lead decision maker and all those things. But then once I got it, the trappings didn't do it for me, right? Mm. It's good to have a nice car, I gotcha, and then the rank and everything that goes with that. But if you have to get respect just off of your rank, you're already kind of losing it, right? If they look at you and they're like, well, that's the boss, but we don't really respect him.
Yeah. Man, he just dropped the mic on that one. Holy cow.
So, you know, I mean, man, I think so. That became a moment where I kind of righted myself when I was like, all right, I came into this job for all these things that he told me that the UT was telling me I wanted. I got it. But what I really want is that impact, right? What I really want is to lead an organization that's making that community better. I'm a little bit of a data nerd, and that I love when we can say that we're reducing crime in a community. I'm big into good policing can make lives better, right? Not only by reducing crime, but by effectively engaging our community. I believe that good policing, when we're trained properly, when we know the importance of connecting with people, we can make lives better. You know, sometimes people might scoff at that. Look, our role is multifaceted in policing. You know, we're law enforcers, we're social workers, we're counselors, we're all kinds of things to many, many different people. And sometimes it's a little much, right? Sometimes I take a breath and I'm like, we cannot solve all these giant social issues.
Yep.
But we can move the needle. Mm-hmm. And we move the needle on a lot of them, whether it's our unhoused community, whether it's gun violence, whether it's people's perception of the police. By being the best version of ourselves, we can make that better. So to be able to lead an organization that works in a place like the city of Roanoke, where we have some challenges, and it doesn't make us bad, right? Danville had challenges. Richmond had challenges. And I love leading in an environment that offers me the ability to lead in that complex world of all these social issues that we can make better. And I remember, once again, kind of going back to the first chief's job, talking to my mentor one day, and it's 2016 maybe, a lot of things were going on. I think it was Baltimore, maybe with Freddie Gray, and they were having riots there, and you could see a real disconnect between the police and the community. And I told him, I was like, man, I really want to get back to a community, and I can lead in an environment we can have that positive impact. Right. So that called to me even then 10 years ago to get back where we can have that positive impact. So that's where I had that epiphany. Right. It's not about the trappings of the job. It's not about just, you know, trying to make people respect me. No, it's about being that person that people can respect and people will listen to, and they allow me to lead and allow us to get better as a community. So
I think you, Gareth, I think you shared this on a previous episode, but it kind of reminds me of that old story of a guy walking down a beach and he sees a kid. The beach is just covered in starfish, and these kids picking up a starfish and he's chucking them in the water. And the guy walks up to the kid and he says, man, he's like, the beach is, covered in starfish. There's no way you're ever going to get all these starfish back in the water. And the kid doesn't say anything. And he picks one up and he tosses it in. And he said, nope, but I helped that one.
Yeah.
There you,
know,
you go.
He saw what he could do, you know, and he started making an impact with what he could do.
There you go.
So now you brought up, you said, your mentor, you know, kind of lured you into this job and said, man, check out all this cool stuff. And, you know, and some people, when they look in, that's what they see. They see the eagles on the collars and they see the nice car and the big office. And, but they don't see all the other things. Chief, what is the tough things that people don't see?
Well, you know, I think the tough things is we've kind of already hit on some of that. You know, we as chiefs, we as police leaders lead in a complex environment, right? We have folks that, let's talk about wellness, right? Which is something very close with all of y'all to kind of flip it back is when I started in policing, nobody cared about wellness. Nobody ever asked how I was. I remember back-to-back incidents early on in my career where literally could have used deadly force two nights in a row and we chose not to, thank God. And we were able to kind of connect with that person, right? And make sure we were safe and our partners were safe. But still, we did some things that now probably officers would be out for a week or so for each of these incidents. And I'm not trying to say that is that we were better. It's just that nobody really cared about us, right? They wanted us to do the job. The job was the most important thing. At the end of your 20, 25, 30 years, I saw many people walk away that were broken, right? Many people that had multiple marriages broken and were alcoholics and really struggled with the job and felt like the job had left them because they had never been cared for. And I would like to think that we are better now as agencies, and I see that. And that's one thing about Roanoke that I really saw early on, my day one, day two, was having a group like the Shield Chaplaincy, Virginia Leap, that can come together and help us hold it together, right? Because it's hard sometimes. And we're making decisions and impacting lives with sometimes very little support from a public that, let's call it what it is sometimes puts us under a microscope and really, really acts like we're not normal humans, right? We have zero ability to make any type of mistake. And that's one thing that continues to be frustrating all these years later is, give us some grace. And Gareth and I have talked about it. Give us grace as police officers in the community. Give each other grace, right? As a police officer, don't judge your partner, your coworker, your shift worker, that detective that comes out on the scene with zero grace, right? Allow them to make some mistakes. Allow them to learn and grow with you. So I think I got off track on that a little bit, man. But you know, I think that's one of the things that weighs heavy on me is thinking about that quite a bit. You know, there's always a challenge when you're dealing with any administration of a city in any city that I've ever been in. I've been lucky and continue to be lucky here, you know, where I work around good city administration, good city manager, good elected officials. And I've had some really good experiences with that over the years. But I've seen chiefs that have had really bad experiences with that over the years. And sometimes it's an incongruence with how we view our mission with how they view our mission for us, right? A little bit sometimes. And policing continues to be a very complex environment, right? When we're dealing with, gosh, police officers can take, you know, lives and liberty away from people. And regardless, that is never easy, right? Even when it's fairly clear cut, that person is still the son, the daughter, the wife, the husband, some family member of some family somewhere that misses them. And that is tremendous responsibility. So all these things kind of circle together as I look at what we do as a profession.
That's definitely something we talk about a lot with the family aspect, you know, just the fact that there is somebody waiting at
home.
You know, so
with wellness, it is interesting that you have talked about early on in your career that there wasn't a strong wellness emphasis. And that is what we've heard kind of not even locally, but nationally, that looking back on it and the statistics equal that when they exit law enforcement, pretty low quality of life, if there's a long tenure of life even after that. So we realize that this job, the body certainly keeps a score and it keeps a record of every single time you have walked into an incident that is high, high stress, and then you go eat Chipotle. And then you walk into a high, high stress situation, then you go home to your wife. And you do that for 20 some years and you have the pressure. Now the hats, if we could lay out all the hats that officers have to wear on a daily basis, you have to have officer safety involved. Mm-hmm. You have to go home. You have to be a tactician and make sure that you protect your team. You have to have the clinician hat. Now, if people are dealing with crisis, you got to identify with that. You have to be a defense attorney because you're going to have to articulate this. You have to be a policy group. You have to wear all these hats. And that's really, really hard on a person and their family. And that's kind of Shield's heart and passion, is that we can't, in fact, make a difference in our community if the officer is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And so true wellness, and this is what we believe in, kind of the triangle of wellness, that if you're physically fit, if you're a PT stud, but mentally you're not where you need to be, you're not going to affect the community. If you're spiritually, if you're dialed in, you're all good to go, your moral compass, you walk with integrity, but then again, your physical side is not dialed in, then we're not well. And so we have to have all these aspects working together so that our community can get the very best from us. So it's really neat to see, and we felt very supported by you in that mission.
Good.
There's sometimes that we work with either local organizations and departments, and thankfully across the state here in the last little while. And that's kind of the first questions that we have when we go to a department. Are they going to support total wellness? Yes or no? And very early on, you were supportive of total wellness. We want our officers so that they can be healthy to help the community.
Yes.
And that's been really refreshing.
Good. That's good to hear from you guys. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I have been under five different chiefs now in Roanoke City, and I have felt extremely supported since you've been here. And I've served under people with very different leadership styles, and have been supported, you know, to one level or another under each of them.
Sure.
And grateful for the opportunity that they all gave me to serve, coming in from the outside as a volunteer chaplain. But early on, I realized, you know, that you are a man who really does care about the overall wellness of the officers. And I just appreciate you seeing the value in what we do.
Absolutely.
Try to bring to the table anyway. And as we meet with officers, and as well as that home front, we end up doing a lot of premarital counseling, mm-hmm. of course, for the weddings that we officiate, and then meet with couples. We've done parenting workshops, a variety of things. We just try to do whatever we can to encourage, to help shape, to help people think about communication skills and that kind of thing in their home life. Because when things are good at home, they'll be better at work.
Yes.
And we try to do what we can with that. Probably need three or four more chaplains to do it more adequately with what we've bitten off. But grateful for your support, Chief.
No, I appreciate that, Darren. And, you know, I think to me, almost 30 years of doing this has evolved into appreciating that. I don't think the me of 20 years ago saw the value. We weren't great at it in Richmond. I mean, I'm sure they're so much better now. I've been gone about 10 years, but we weren't great at it there. And, police officers, if you're a police officer that's really out there trying to have impact and trying to do good work, and you're all consumed sometimes by it. And sometimes we need folks like you all here, kind of like right in front of us, to take advantage of it. Because if you just say, hey, guys, here's a number, call this number, it's probably not going to happen,
nope,
right? It's probably, nope, I got to work that day. And, you know, life gets in the way, and police life especially gets in the way. So I love the fact, the model we have here, where you guys are kind of ever present. I think that works for police agencies.
So speaking of chaplaincy, if we can have a real talk, we have developed this model with conjunction of other chiefs and leadership through the past several years. And I've kind of found it that there needs to be a ever-present relationship with officers, which is why we ride. It's why we spend time at the mm-hmm. academy. We go to trainings. That way we can build that relational equity to where when there's a need, there's a trust there. as you could imagine, law enforcement's trust of outsiders is relatively low, if not negative. And so you add on top of that being a pastor, that's strike two. So you're not one of us and you're a pastor, you're in the negative. So it takes a while to develop a relationship and develop a trust to where they can reach out in a moment of need. So that's what kind of what we've seen and just developed across the years. And with Shield, it's kind of what we're aware of at this point. There's not another organization here in the state that has full-time chaplains that are embedded within the department, not an outside type entity, but embedded in and through. What has been your experience over 30 years? And this is where we have the brutally honest moment. What has your been experience with chaplains across the years?
Is this where I get to tell my story that we talked about earlier? So we know you guys set me up, but I don't mind telling a good story.
That was a slow pitch softball.
Yeah, I look at like the chaplains I think that we had in Richmond. I mostly remember them coming out and offering prayers at events, right? A promotion ceremony or something like that. And they did a good job with that. And we had a group of faith leaders that would come together there on a regular basis and help us with community events. But actual chaplain, when I went to the Metro Washington Airports Authority as police chief, one of my boss says, "Hey, we got a chaplain issue." And I'm like, "Well, what's the issue?" So real talk, is this what you want,
yes,
Garrett?
Sir,
this is what
it.
You want. This is what the people want.
This is it. And so, they don't know what's about to happen.
So
but this is gonna be good.
So my boss said, "Look, we got a chaplain. He had been around for a long time. He was probably almost 80. There's actually two chaplains up there, but this is specifically with one. He was about 80. Had some medical conditions, and I think they wore a uniform, right? And I remember seeing a picture of him. And I was like, wow, is this a member of the command staff? He had a white shirt on, right? Older gentleman. I had no idea until I got there that he was one of the two chaplains. And so my boss is like, "Look, he comes out on Fridays. And, you know, airport segue is a big thing, right? So we had Dulles and we had Reagan National Airport, like 46, 47 million passengers come through there a year. So the chaplain would come and he would get a Segway and he would ride around on Friday evening at one of the airports, right? And the information we got was like, "Hey, the chaplain gets on the Segway, the officers can't use it because the chaplain's on it." And he was just riding Segway, right? He really wasn't connecting with the folks, with the officers that much. And then there was another issue that been brought to my boss is like, in the Segway, he had already hit a passenger. So why are you laughing here? So he had hit a passenger, right? And they had seen him ride.
I was focusing Garrett's face right now.
They had seen him riding the Segway up the escalator. And so like, great. So I got to be the bad guy, yeah. Of course. So, you know,
two questions.
Okay.
After the incident where he struck a passenger, was there any prayers that were offered after that?
Man, I think that happened before I walked in the door because, okay, like, he lays this on me and says, "Hey, yeah, you got to handle this." I'm like, "All right, awesome."
Yeah.
So, you know, I sat down with him and I said, "Hey, man, really like what you're doing with our officers. Want you to stay connected. Come in and ride with them." And because we had cars, I mean, they have multiple patrol methodologies there. And he looked at me, and true story, he looked at me, he goes, "No." I was like, "Hey, man."
You know, wow.
I was like, right. Holy so, moly. You know, yeah. I was, it was great until he just looked at me and said, "No." I was like, "Man, I am the chief." I said, and he really, he wasn't happy with that. In his mind, the chaplain rides the Segway. And he ended up turning his stuff in. But the good part of that story is,
oh my heavens,
is that we got a gentleman later on that I think was much more connected to the department. And he probably continues to serve there. And then I had another issue with in another agency where a chaplain was, I think he was there for the right reasons. He's probably started being there for the right reasons, but then he very much kind of got into the trappings of the office. Like we talked about with chiefs, right? And what we saw when we had to alter some of the trappings just because of some policy changes, there was a real rub there. So kind of like what I said with Chief, if you're there for the right reasons, it's going to show. If you're there for the people, it's going to come out.
And Gareth, sometimes people aren't there for the people, man. And so you're running over, you know, you're running over folks and using and abusing the segue, you might have to go.
In the chaplain world, we call it the ministry of presence. Sounds like that chaplain had a ministry of the segue. So, not at all to oversimplify or to defend maybe that chaplain's behavior. But it's pretty evident that our military, we kind of look as a paramilitary organization, we look to the military for leadership, and some of that, as you've hit on, doesn't quite fit. The military has a model of chaplaincy that has extended way back into the Revolutionary War, so it's been a long tenure of that. Police chaplaincy is a relatively new idea, and the Supreme Court has overturned some things recently that have allowed us to have a little more freedom with that. So this idea of police chaplaincy embedded within the department, departments don't really know what to do with that. And so not at all to defend the segue experience, but sometimes as chaplains, departments do not give appropriate leadership and lanes for chaplains to operate within. And so it has been our experience that when we sit down with the departments and they will ask us, hey, we want to start a chaplain program, our initial questions are, what do you want out of that? Do you want chaplains and community members to come in and to pray for things, to offer spiritual leadership? Not at all demeaning that. That is very, very important to the department and the community. But if you want someone that is integrated within your department, that's a whole different deal. And you need to take a pastor who we're going to presume they know how to take care of people. We'll just presume that they've got all that. But their qualifications for being a chaplain is they're not a felon and that they can pass a background check and they're ordained. That allows them to be integrated in the department. That's a pretty low standard. So we have to provide a way for them to get within the department, understand the culture, and that's kind of what SHIELD, we've been trying to do with departments so that we don't have segue incidents.
We don't want a segue incident.
Yeah, that's profound.
The whole time he's telling that story. So earlier this year, we were able to serve MY both airports in the incident that happened there in January. And I'm just because I have those visions of those airports, I was serving there. I'm just imagining this guy rolling down the hall and rolling into somebody as those double doors come open down at the end of the hall. You know, that's all I could think of in my head.
After hearing this story, when I went back, I asked to borrow one of the Segways. They said, no, we don't do that. So good effective leadership. So.
I will say this. You will find some folks that do remember that story. Yep.
We did.
I have a feeling we didn't find that. I know one in particular that remembers that story.
And he told us that story.
Did he laugh, though, when he told you the story?
He may or may not have a dog as well, similar to Scarlet.
Yeah.
So we will often ask, too, at departments when we go and we get to respond to critical incidents, we will ask, hey, do you have a chaplain? And that's part of kind of our discovery phase of what are the local resources you have here? Do you have somebody you can go talk to? Is there clinicians around? And we'll ask, do you have a chaplain? And they often respond to us, yeah, I saw him at graduation. I can't remember his name. And immediately we go, you don't have a chaplain. You don't. Right. If you don't know his name, if you don't know his phone number, if you've never seen him, you do not have that. So we have tried to correct that with SHIELD. And I think by and large, you've been able to do that.
I think so. And, you know, I know this isn't really about you guys, but I do think that the model here works, right? And it works because you guys care, you know, so to kind of give you some kudos. I've never felt like that you aren't connected to the department, to the region, to the departments in the region aren't trying to make it better, you know? So I think that's important to me as a chief, is seeing that you guys are out here for the right reasons and doing good things. I mean, that's one reason I wanted to spend some time with you all today. Wasn't just so I could throw zingers with Gareth, you know. I could do that any day, but you guys do good work. So thank you.
Thanks.
Really appreciate that, Chief. And also funny story. It's not a surprise to people who know Gareth.
Oh boy.
This won't surprise anyone, but Gareth is a little jumpy.
A little bit.
And I've heard. You've picked up on that.
I know.
Yep.
And the game is far from over there, Darren.
Yeah.
Make no mistake.
I live on high alert, and every time I see Chief, he starts squatting down, and his eyes get bigger, and I'm like, I'm gonna get attacked again.
I do like that, Darren. Yeah, that's good. Thanks for reminding me that the game is afoot. We're not gonna let it go yet.
That's right.
It is a little awkward when you try to attack your chief, though. So we've yet to roll that dice the other way. So
we did learn that Gareth does not frequent Starbucks. So if you think you have, I think you might be seeing him in Starbucks. It's
Gareth,
not him.
Do you not drink coffee? This explains a lot.
Sir.
Do you
not drink? Oh, he drinks black coffee.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, I got gotcha.
I just.
It's more like a 7-Eleven.
Okay, I gotcha. Sheets.
That yeah. Pilot. That's that right. Hurt. Nobody's asked me that question since maybe elementary school. I am currently 4 shots of espresso and 2 cups of coffee in. So
okay.
Yeah, I gotcha. We're heavily caffeinated and slightly medicated. So
okay. It's got a little issue we're trying to work through.
Yeah, caffeine's not a problem if I have it.
Hey, Chief, I'd love just as we're coming to the close of this thing, I'd love just to celebrate a little bit here at the end. And we've talked about some of your challenges and stuff like that. But let's talk about some of your greatest moments as Chief. When you look back over your 30-year career, what are some of those things that you celebrate over the last 30 years?
Just as Chief or just in policing in general?
We can go across the board.
Yeah, so. You know, man, I tell you, and I won't stick it to any particular rank or whatever, but some of the things that I remember, it's always kind of tied to impact, right? I remember leading a group of folks, the initiative that we do in Richmond every year was called Fugitives and Firearms Initiative, being a part of that and being able to connect people to different problems regarding gun violence in the community where we're able to get illegal guns off the street. That makes me very proud to continue to do that. I didn't start it. I just continued it for that brief period in time. That makes me happy. Kind of as a brand new officer, I got to do about a year and a half of undercover work in the city of Richmond and get those drugs and some dangerous folks off the street. So that makes me, once again, feels like I had an impact. I was on the SWAT team for a number of years there. That camaraderie, being able to go in and extract people out of dangerous situations, going after someone who had just killed an officer early on in my career, and being able to bring that person to justice, right, is a moment that I hold on to. Kind of once I got out there as chief, is really kind of, to me, in the last 10 years, has been about learning and evolving and leading. And I love to lead. I do. So we talk about that impact's important, but I love being that person that can make that decision. I love being that person that gets up in the morning and still feels like I'm adding value in a community and in an organization. I love feeling like, hey, not everybody can do this. This gives me some pride. I think a lot of folks think they can, right? But let's be realistic. With the stressors of being in a police agency and the stressors that the community puts on us, sometimes it's a lot. And I do still appreciate the fact that I'm able to make those decisions and work with a team that really allows me to make those decisions. Because make no mistake, it's not me. It's the people around me, right? And whether it's an officer, a lieutenant, captain, deputy chief, here in Roanoke, I think we have some phenomenal folks that feel the same way, right? When they get up in the morning, they care about the community, they want to make things better, and being able to lead amongst them, right? Where they're not just clocking in and clocking out, they continue to add value. And I see that with folks that literally, even as they're coming up on retirement, they're still out there doing the work, right? I passed a couple of them this morning. I won't name them. I won't embarrass them. But I'm like, these folks are still in it, right? They're still in it to win it. They're mm-hmm. retiring in 2 weeks, and they still want to be here. They still want to be connected to this community. They haven't given up. And it does a lot for me to lead folks like that, right? That's at the end of the day, that feeling, I think, is still what gets me up in the morning.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about that guy that's in the academy now. There's a class. They're actually right across the hall from us right now. They're in class. If one of these younger officers on the street comes up to you, or maybe a new sergeant or somebody like that, and says, "Hey, Chief, I'm really thinking in my heart that I might want to be chief one day." What do you say to him?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go back to how we started that. I think you're a little weird. No, but no, I get that. So I would say to them to not think about maybe being chief right now, but think about being the best version of you, right? So take, certainly invest in your leadership capacity, invest in your education, take advantage of everything that the department, the community offers you, connect with people. One thing that I will say from my day one until even now, but I don't get as many opportunities, is I do different things, right? So even in Richmond, as I was coming up, even though I always looked at myself early on as like an undercover guy doing drug work, SWAT guy, I knew I needed to evolve, right? So once I got comfortable with that, I was like, all right, now it's time to go to the academy and do recruit training. All right, now it's time to get promoted to lieutenant and go lead a sector of the city. Now I want to get you right. So I was always keeping myself out of my comfort zone. And I think that is something as a leader that if you want to grow, keep yourself out of your comfort zone. Once you get complacent, once you feel like you're just going through the motion, go somewhere and grow and learn, man. You know, I think there's a couple, I don't want to misquote that, but you know, if you're not growing, you're not leading, right? I mean, every day I feel like I want to learn something else. And I think as a new officer, you should always be growing. You should always be learning. If you want to be a chief, that will serve you well. Don't just go to patrol and say, all right, I'm here for 20 years and magically I'm going to be chief. Now do your patrol time, go to your community response bureau, go to investigations, go to the academy and work, and keep kind of building that repertoire until you've got all the tools that you need to make good decisions and add value to people. One thing that I will say, and I tap into this daily, because I've been lucky enough to serve in a lot of different positions within policing, it helps my knowledge base when it comes to making decisions. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
100%. So, you know, as we sit around the table and we're talking about something in the organization or how we want to move things forward, having served, whether it's in patrol or the academy or investigations or what have you, I just have so many more tools to choose from. So build your toolbox up early on, right? Don't just think. You know, I think sometimes police officers, they want that perfect world, right, where opportunities are just going to come to them. Just by being Gareth, right? I'm just going to use it. It's going to automatically, everything is going to come to me. Seek that out, right? Be that person. Show people that you can make those decisions, that you can do the job. Get out there and do it. And be fearless. And I'm not saying just be fearless. Sometimes it's easy for police officers to be fearless. And I know police officers that will run into the line of fire, run into a house, literally show fearlessness in the face of adversity. But when it comes to a minor change in lifestyle or career, they fight that sometimes, right? And there's a risk aversion sometimes to taking a step or getting out of that comfort zone. It's like, hey, you know, I've been in narcotics for 10 years. Even though this might help me to grow, I don't want to do that. Be fearless, man. Take that step. Take on a different responsibility. Build your toolbox. And I think it'll make you better. It'll put you in a position where you can be a chief, right? Wow. You're able to reach into that bag of tricks and use that knowledge to evolve both yourself and an agency and a community.
And that's good advice. And I, you know, what I've seen through the years, you know, again, I've been in Roanoke City in particular. We serve other departments, but Roanoke City's home for me because I started volunteering in 2009. And what I've seen through the years is guys who maybe they rose up to lieutenant in the city or perhaps captain, but you know, they'll go to a smaller department, even just as a lieutenant from the city, and be a chief in another department, in a smaller department somewhere. So just that, the experience that they are able to get here in Roanoke can open up doors elsewhere, maybe beyond what they are thinking about.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Well, Chief, thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
Yes, sir.
We really appreciate you being willing to sit down with us. It's a big deal for us, and we really, really super appreciate it. We're super excited for you know, all that's happened so far, but we're even looking forward to everything that we haven't seen yet. We believe the future is even brighter. You know, I think you've kind of said it. We're always striving, right? You know,
always striving. We got to keep it moving. Thing.
So So we're super excited. Hey, I want to personally say to you, I was last year. I was sitting in a room with an officer when you came in after a critical incident. I'm not going to share anything about that whatsoever. But I remember you looked at him that night, and it was middle of the night. We were all tired, and you just said, "I've got your back as your chief." And when you walked out of the room, he just sat like this. And then I looked at him, and I said, "I don't want you to know." I said, "I'd run through a wall for a guy like that, for a leader like that." So thank you for, like Garrett said earlier, we appreciate your leadership a lot. And we appreciate everything you do, and thanks for all the great words. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this thing 3 or 4 times. There's so much stuff I want to write down. But thanks again for taking your time. We really appreciate it.
Yep. And thank you guys for what you do and for having me today. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So, well, we will catch you guys on the next episode of the Shield Armory. Thanks for spending time today with us on the Shield Armory. We hope this episode brought encouragement, insight, and a reminder that you're not alone out there. Whether you're on the road, behind the desk, on dispatch, or at home, know that your service matters and you are seen. If this episode helped you in any way, share it with someone you feel it could be an encouragement to. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, stay safe, stay grounded, and as always, watch your six.